Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman. The co-host with me today will be David Holly. This episode we'll be previewing the match for Fulham against Nottingham Forest at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through in this 60-minute episode, but before we do anything, I have to always welcome my co-host back to the show, Mr. Holly. How you doing?
Hi, Russ. Good to be back again. I had another week of hospitals, I think, so glad to see the back of them. Thankfully, I've basically been given the push by two consultants, so obviously they're happy with me. You know, it was actually very, very surreal on Thursday. I went to see my surgeon, the one who chopped me up, and he basically said, "That's it now. Just we'll see you once a year for a checkup, and that's it. Shall we go for a beer?" So I ended up going. I went up to have a beer with him. Went and sat and discussed all everything else apart from surgery over a beer. So that was really nice, actually.
Well, that's good news, David. I'm glad to hear that. Seriously, I'm glad to hear that that situation seems to be under control. So I'm very glad to hear it. And you're dealing with other stuff too. So hang in there, my friend. And you know, let's hope everything works out for the best. And but I'm glad that you have that good news in regards to your personal issues. So very good, my friend. All right, let's get into
that's
the show.
Good. It's good.
No, it is good.
Good.
It's great news. It's actually great news. But let's get into the show. And I have a couple bonus topics for you in the Cottage Talk Roundtable. I'm going to start with this one because this came over on the Fulham FC Twitter account earlier today. And, you know, this is a newsworthy story, so we have to talk about it. It's entitled FA Charge. Fulham have been fined £5,000 after the club admitted an FA charge of failing to ensure its players conducted themselves in an orderly fashion. The standard penalty, which the club accepted, followed a 29th-minute incident during the game against Brighton Hove Albion on April the 15th. David, what are your thoughts about this charge?
Well, these things are there for a reason, and you know, much as referees can be useless sometimes, you know, you have to respect the referee's decision. If you don't respect the referee's decision, you have all sorts of chaos and bedlam set out. Okay, it'd be nice if we had referees that weren't useless, incompetent idiots and people who throw themselves to the floor like George Boyd and Joey Barton and now this chap from Brighton as well every 5 minutes. And really what we should be doing is tackling the problem of cheaters, which we know is a bugbear for all of us. But,
yes,
you know, the ref has given a decision and no amount of, like, manhandling him or arguing with him is going to change that. So you have to show respect for the decision. However, I thought it was a crap decision. And to be honest with you, in terms of, like, you know, improper conduct or whatever it was we did, it's really at, the minimum end of things, you know. Scott Parker was like, you know, as captain has a right to speak to the ref, and he was obviously angry. But, you know, this is not when we've seen nine players from Manchester United forming a circle around the referee and, like, almost, like, you know, barging him from one side to the other. This was very, very minor. So it's one rule for one club and one rule for others, it seems sometimes with these, that you get the sharp end of the stick if you're not one of the big, you know, fancy teams. Bigger teams seem to get away with things a lot more. But as I say, if you don't have respect for the referee, you know, the whole game is going to become chaos. And especially, you know, where you really see it is at the grassroots football, the sort of football that I play, Mike Gregg's played, you know, Sunday morning park football. Referees who are amateurs basically do it for a few quid, you know, for beer money or whatever you call it. And you know, if the top paid professionals can't respect the referees, then, you know, you get that on Sundays. And, you know, people don't want to be referees because of fear of abuse or violence. So there has to be rules, and I understand that. But as we know, as I said, it was a crap decision by the ref. It was cheating by the Brighton player. But Stearman didn't do himself any favours. And I think what we did was very minor. You see worse nearly every other game when there's a contested penalty decision or any decision for that matter.
Listen, I hear you. First of all, my thoughts on this is that it was a horrible call. You know, you and I have already talked about this. It was, and I hate divers, so let's start there. I hate the call. It was a horrible call. He got it wrong. Let's start there. But, David, very good point by you. There are rules that you need to follow, and And if we broke the rules, then we should be charged. And in this case, I watched it a couple times, and apparently, you know, if, again, I recommend you looking at it. The one thing that I don't have any time for is a player or anyone putting a hand on a referee. It looks like to me that Ryan Fredericks put his hand on the referee, David. So for me, that to me is where the line was crossed. You know, he's a Fulham player. I back all the Fulham players, but I cannot back someone putting a hand on a referee.
No, that's right. And the thing is, I don't know if Fredericks was booked for that, because if he wasn't, then he should have been, really. You know, that certainly is it wrong. I mean, it's okay touching one accidentally, or perhaps a friendly pat or something if a referee gives a decision or speaks to you in a way, but not in a kind of confrontational way, I think. And that's probably one of the only downsides with Ryan Fredericks. We've seen him; he gets a bit, agitated sometimes. And he's another player that is unfortunately can, if things go badly, can pick up cards, like we've seen with a few others. And it's
right.
Kind of a little bit, people have talked about this before, about the discipline of the team, the bigger picture, how many penalties we've given away, yellow cards, red cards, and things. And you liken it to the era under Roy Hodgson, where, we were at the top of the Fair Play League, because of the fact that, we showed respect to the officials, we showed respect to the opposition, we had low numbers of yellow and red cards, and all these things are factored in. And at the moment, this kind of is just endemic. There's so many things you could really nitpick about the club and the team at the moment. I don't know. Obviously, when things are going well and you're near the top of the table, perhaps it's easier. But we're at the bottom of the table when we had Roy Hodgson as well, and he got us out just about with the Great Escape. And there was none of this really. There was a much better spirit, I think. And it's just, I think there's going to be big changes to come still in terms of,
I totally agree.
Many aspects of the club and the playing staff, and to get back to a much better situation. I'm not saying that we'll be the same team we were under Roy. If we're a more gritty team, we may have to be a more gritty team to try and compete in this division, which means you always risk picking up yellow and red cards, I guess, if you're going to be more robust. But there's still ways to do it, and as I say, if you commit a foul, or if the referee gives a decision you don't like, I'm sure it's fine to say, oh, come on, ref, that's not right. But more than that, I know the heat of the moment, it's easy to say these things. I've picked the ball up and booted it 100 yards away when the referee's given a bad decision against me, so I'm a fine one to talk. it's frustrating. It's easy to sit here, on a Friday night, talking nicely about it and saying, yeah, all these players are all naughty because they've thrown their toys out the pram and, they should behave themselves and be self-controlled. It's, a passionate game and these things do happen, but
sure. The
rules are there, and if you cross a certain line, Jamie Vardy's finding out to his cost as well. He's been charged for the way he, again, another poor referee, really. I think the decision was right on this occasion, but a poor referee in other ways, and, he's finding out to his cost. And if, a ban for him for two or three games now means that Leicester fail to win, win the league, it's going to be a very, very big price to pay there.
Yeah.
All we can say on this show, whatever we think about the standard of refereeing, someone is doing the job and you have to respect that. And I don't think anyone there is, to say anyone would be doing it deliberately would be a very dangerous precedent to set. But I think it's fine to say that some of the referees we've seen have been pretty useless. And even at Premier League level, some of the referees aren't as good as others. There's clearly referees who are better, and those are the ones who do the international matches and the majority of the big matches. But, I've had it when I play. We've had 80-year-old referees ref my matches before. Guys, you can't move outside the centre circle. And you have to give the respect that some guy in his 80s is prepared to come out and do that still. It's either that or no referee, Sunday league level sometimes. Let's try and be tolerant of the referee and accept the thing. At the end of the day, it's a very small punishment, really. It's a very small slap on the wrists. And, you know, it's just about, as I say, Slavisa has to get a better discipline into the squad, I think. Let's, you know, channel our energy and aggressions into playing, you know, attacking and successful football.
Absolutely, David. Very good point. And just to wrap up this discussion, you know, this is a discussion I wasn't planning on when we originally were going to be doing the show, but it came up today. And I watched back the incident. I watched it a few times. And listen, if there is someone out there, Fulham fans, that disagree with me, think I'm being harsh on the players, especially Ryan Fredericks, it looks like to me that he did put his hand on the ref. You know, take a look at it. If you think I'm wrong, please tell me I'm wrong. But this is what it looked like to me. I wasn't there. Maybe I'm wrong. But based on what I watched, it looked like that. And if that's the case, I like the passion from Ryan Fredericks, but don't cross the line. That, to me, is crossing the line. You can straddle the fence, but don't cross the line. And that, to me, putting a hand on a ref, to me, is crossing the line. You know, and like you said, David, channel that aggression and play attractive and good, positive football and get the victory. You know, and listen, I've been in these situations too, David. I've gone at referees. But the one thing that I have never done is cross the line. And that's my only point on this. Please, don't cross the line. You can be angry, just don't cross the line. Don't put your hands on a referee. That's my thoughts on that. And again, if I'm wrong, if there's a fan that thinks I'm wrong, go look at the tape and tell me I'm wrong. But I don't think I am in this case, David. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Slavisa, because this week I saw this article and I'm like, cannot wait to talk to David about this. So let's talk about it. What are your thoughts on the Get West London article entitled, Fulham boss says he wants to be like Manchester United and Arsenal legends and stay 20 years at the Cottage? What are your thoughts about that, David?
I think he needs one of our legendary white coat awards, you know, for that. I'm not sure in football how anyone can make such wide statements, you know, such planning. Yeah, it'd be great, but, you know, how often do you ever get a manager stays 20 years in a job in football? It's very, very much the exception to the rule. Yeah, I'm sure if he turns out to be a success that we hope he can be, we want to keep him as long as possible. But at this stage, with all the kind of troubles we've had and talks of unrest and rumours of whatever going on, and, you know, from top to bottom, literally, issues with the club, let's say, you know, questions about the owner, questions about Rigg, questions about McIntosh, you know, even questions, you know, and I have no problem with Jokanovic, but, you know, some of our co-hosts aren't as keen on him as I am, perhaps. And then half the squad aren't good enough. There's an awful lot of ailments we have to cure at the moment. So, I mean, if he really wants to stay 20 years as it is at the moment, then I think he's mad anyway, but it's wonderful. You know, if he really has any sort of seriousness about that and he thinks that, yeah, this is the place for me, I can turn things around here and stay, good on him. Go out and do it then.
Listen, I'm there with you, David. You know, it's unrealistic. I would love to see it because that means that Fulham have been very successful. If he's with Fulham for 20 years, that means we are back in the Premier League and we're thriving. The reality is it's going to be difficult. But the fact that he wants to do it, that he has that desire to do it, David, I think that's a positive.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's great, but I kind of think we need to be looking a bit more short-term than that at the moment.
Basically, one season at a time or basically one match at a time? Let's get through this season is where you're going.
Well,
David?
Let's get this through this season. If we can make a success next season, then perhaps start looking more long-term.
Okay. And David, that could be why Slavisa was initially given an 18-month contract. It's kind of a prove-it contract. So he came in during a difficult period, and next year will be his prove-it year because he has to show what he can do. He needs to show improvement, and then we can talk. It's actually a very good point because when he was initially given the deal, David, of 18 months, I was thinking, that's too short. But on the flip side, it's probably not a bad idea because it's really, you know, ownership saying, you got to show me that you're the long-term the long-term solution, and then what, then you'll get the contract, David.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's there's so many factors to sort of. It's not just Jokanović, unfortunately. It's the squad. You know, how are we going to have such a large overhaul of the squad without breaking FFP again? You know, is Mike Rigg a part of the problem, part of the solution? Will he still be here? There's a lot to sort out, and I don't think we can be looking too far ahead at the moment. Certainly, you know, short term is finished the season. We're almost safe. We're almost safe mathematically. 1 point, I think, is enough now to be absolutely sure. And we've got 3 games to get a point. Then, obviously, start planning for the summer. And from there, obviously, let's see how we start next season. Then you can perhaps, if we have a good start to next season, I would imagine they'll be getting the pen and paper out and saying, right, let's extend your contract.
I hear you, David. I hear you. So you're more looking, let's see what he can do. Let's see him prove it. Let's see, because there is a great deal that needs to be done, like you mentioned. They need to get rid of the dead weight, as I would say, over here. You know, get rid of all that dead weight, bring in some new blood, and let's see where you can take this team. And I think next year is going to be huge for Slavisa Jokanović. Then you give him the deal. No, I hear where you're going on that, David. All right, let's move on. And speculation from Heroes of City has fallen linked to 28-year-old VfL Bochum striker Simon Terod, who has scored 22 goals in 33 games. Fulham have also been linked to his teammate, 27-year-old centre-back Felix Bastions, who before has actually, I believe, played for Nottingham Forest. What are your thoughts on this speculation? You probably don't know much about the players, but regardless, I think it's actually good that we're starting to get speculation on players for the new season, David.
I mean, you're right. I don't know anything about these players. You could tell me any name, literally, and unless you were sort of talking about, you know, one of the big names like Messi or Bale or someone, you know, it would be quite hard to sort of give you a straight answer on it. But I mean, obviously, it's good that we're looking, perhaps, you know, in other leagues, in other areas. So far, you know, touch wood, Michael Maddow has been, you know, a positive improvement so far, and if we'd assume that he is someone they're going to be looking to sign permanently in the summer. And, you know, a bit like, in a funny way, Roy Hodgson, obviously, his experience of working abroad in Europe, he had other avenues to explore, bringing in people like Hangeland and, for example, obviously, Nevland as well. He brought in Leon Andreasen on a short-term deal as well from, I think, from Germany, actually. Might be wrong, and so on. And so, yeah, it's good that we're looking in all areas, I guess, and people are being linked. But the question is, as you know, as I've said before with everyone, the Championship is a funny old league to play in. I'm not sure if everyone will be suited to it. It's, you know, it's horses for courses. As much as you want to bring in, you know, foreign stars or guys from other leagues, you know, some of the most successful teams, you know, I've been built around, I mean, homegrown players and people who have played at this level quite extensively. Obviously, a balance, I think, is the ideal thing. But, you know, we have a squad at the moment that's made up of lots of factions. We have a few have been here a very long time, a few have been here a very short time, you know, and different people come in at different times. But there's no one who's, you know, there's not really a hard core of players who've been here a long time now. When you look at the total appearances of the squad, not many have played that many games, if you know what I mean. Compared to, you know, under the Hodgson days and before, you had, you know, lots of players who had played 50, 100 games for the club or more. And you've got to get, I guess, some sort of solidity to the team, a settled squad, people who are together, you know, all the time, who get to play together all the time, become, you know, friends, hopefully, and, you know, are a real team. You know, you say we look at, like, Leicester. I mean, Leicester is mixed. Made of a mix of people from all sorts of walks of football. They're not just sort of seasoned pros from the UK. They're from other countries as well. But they're very, very much a team. And whatever it takes, you know, I think if you have a team that has good team spirit, that can often compensate for sort of deficiencies, perhaps, in ability. They really
totally
play
agree
each
with
other.
That. I totally
and,
agree
and
with that,
think,
David.
Yeah. And I don't think we have a team that's really playing for each other at the moment. I think, you know, I've listened to the rumours and things, and I've looked at the players myself, and sometimes there seems to be sort of factions within the team, I think, and the team isn't really quite clicking, and I think that's some of our problem. And as I say, we have people who were brought in by Kit, people who were brought in by Felix, people who have been brought in by, you know, Slavisa now, and I guess there are people who are still here from, you know, a few of them just here from the Premier League days, either as juniors or people like Scott Parker, of course. So it's just people, you know, it's just we need some togetherness. And
totally.
The difficulties thing is we know we have to bring in, you know, a whole new team, really. It really is that much. You know, we've got a big squad, but we've identified that probably half of them are not good enough, at least. Well, okay, maybe we don't need as many players to come back in, but we still need, you know, a substantial amount of players. So how do you do that and find the right balance between, obviously, the ability and the camaraderie that you need? And that's going to be the real test of this. So I'm excited to see who we bring in, but more excited or hopeful to see how it all fits together in the bigger picture.
Right, David. And listen, you really went through that fantastically. And that's not even a word. You really did a fantastic job. Fantastically is not a word, is it? But you really broke down the issues that Fulham are having. And the reason why I brought up this speculation, because I think it's good that we're already starting to see it. We need players that are going to be buying into what Slavisa wants to do. And they have to have high character. I'm a believer in players that have a high character and that want to fight for the team, fight for each other. Slavisa needs to find the players that are still with the team that want to do that and get rid of everyone else. It's a big job, and then he needs to find the players that want to have that type of commitment, that high character, but also have the skill. It's a delicate balance, David. You're right about that. But he needs to clean house and build his own team in his model, what he is looking for. It's got to be his vision. He's got to find players that fit his vision. And if there's a player that's talented that doesn't fit his vision, he needs to go. If there is a player that doesn't have the right attitude, David, he needs to go. They need to want to play for Fulham. They need to want to play for Slavisa Jokanović. And it doesn't have to be the most talented player. It has to be someone that wants to win, wants to be a part of a team, does have some skill, but has to have all those qualities. I agree with you. It's a tough job, but it can be done. Other teams have done it. We need the camaraderie. We need to get rid of all the bad apples, David, and bring in the new people to fit with the players that we already want and that fit the model of Slavisa. Does that make sense?
No. I think we're both on the same page with that really there, Russ.
Okay, very good, David. Let's move on. I've got a bonus topic for you. We're talking about players coming in. Well, let's talk about a player that's already at Fulham. I saw this speculation today. It's also from Heroes of the City, and it's entitled, Agent of Fulham Town, Lasse Vigen Christensen, insists client wants to stay at the club. Just want to mention LVC is under contract for one more season after this season is over. This is right from the article. Cottagers fans will be hoping to finish a lot higher up the championship table next term, and in order to do so, they will want to keep some of their most talented players. One such player is Danish talent Lasse Vigen Christensen. His agent, Gulli Thomasson, has now been discussing his future to the press in Denmark and has suggested that Christensen wants to stay at Fulham as looking to extend his contract. Bold are reporting his agent as stating, quote, this is from his agent, Fulham would like to extend. Lasse feels really good at the club and he's happy to be there. Both sides hope to sort it out, and if that happens, Lasse would like a new Fulham contract. Later on in the article, it states, the same report does, however, state that an initial contract offer for Fulham has been rejected by the player, but hopes are high that a deal can be reached. David, I think this is positive news. What are your thoughts about the speculation of a new deal for Lasse Vigen Christensen?
Well, I guess, obviously, this is something that has to be broached, but I also wonder how much of this is an agent angling for, you know, a better deal for his client, of course. And especially if you say there's been, you know, an initial contract offer but rejected. I think, you know, it's come to kind of, to use the expression, shit or bust for LBC now. We have a lot of midfielders who could
right.
be around. Yeah, and I think it's time for him either to, you know, become a regular part of the team, or maybe look elsewhere. He's probably not at a stage now where he wants to be periphery and sort of, you know, just a fill-in in case someone's injured. I think he wants to be part of it. And he's shown, obviously, especially last season at times, that at this level, he's a very useful player. But the difficulty at the moment is we've had lots of system changes, we've had coach changes. LBC is, you know, from being a central midfielder, he's been forced to play out wide, even on the left, which doesn't suit him particularly. A little better on the right, I think. But, you know, as I say, it's, I think this stand up and be counted time, there's a lot of people who need to go at the end of the season. So it's time for LBC to stand up and say, you know, I want to definitely be here. I'm prepared to commit to you if you're prepared to commit to me, which obviously means a longer contract and more money. But, you know, he's definitely a good talent, potentially. We've seen what he can do, and if he can, you know, do that regularly and consistently and build upon that, then he's a very valuable player to have. On the other side, you know, like with anyone else, get him on a good contract, and if he has to go, then at least get some money for him, if that's the case, rather than, you know, let them potentially walk for free or for very little, because that's the case at the moment. We could lose a lot of players at the end of the season for nothing, people who, you know, some would say are worth a fee. So don't let that happen if you can help it. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to be prudent as well. We're going to be bringing a lot of people in. Our wage bill potentially could still be quite high. We have to spend money out. We can't give everybody a new contract, a better contract. But for me, LBC certainly, you know, we've seen the glimpses of what he can do, certainly last season. And, you know, coming back last week, that little cameo, or sorry, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was against Cardiff there, you know, at the end, fantastic sort of effort from him to set up the winning goal. I think it's certainly in Fulham's interest to see if they can thrash out a new deal for him.
David, I totally agree with you. I actually think he's a player that should be part of the core. I know it's still potential at this point, but I think, let me ask you, is this why you're kind of not 100% sold on this? Is it his injury history that worries you a little bit?
I'm not too worried about his injury history. I think some of that was down to poor management at the time. You remember Kit Simons brought him back much, much too early.
Too early.
Yeah, and so that was a setback for him. I mean, there's the question that is he one of these players who has dodgy hamstrings or something like that? You get players who have them. I mean, I have short hamstrings, I think, for my height. I can't bend over. I haven't been able to touch the floor since I was about 14, Russ. You know, I grew from being 5'4" to about 6' in no time at all. My hamstrings never went with me. And some people do have these kind of tendencies where they have a certain, you know, weakness on their body. But I don't think that it's enough of an issue at the moment to worry about. Say that the main injury that he had really was I think caused by that coming back too early. Before that, he'd been injury free as far as I can remember.
Yep.
So, you know, he has obviously next season still under contract anyway. The club should know these things. I mean, the club will know whether this is kind of an injury caused by playing too much or not recovering correctly, or whether he has a kind of a tendency to a weakness in this area, and that should kind of help make their decision as well. I mean, you're not going to give a massive contract and lots of money to a player that is very likely about injured. I mean, this was, you know, you go back to the Jimmy Bullard situation. This guy had a serious knee injury for us, and your favourite team gave us, you know, $5 million for him or something, and gave him a massive contract.
Until
he was 57, you know, paying him £100 million a week for a guy that, you know, had a very bad knee injury, and as it was, you know, he had a recurrence, or he had a similar injury, or something happened when he went there, and you know, you've got to be prudent with these things as well, and I'm sure, you know, with all the analytics they do, both, you know, the stat people and also, you know, the physios and people like that, that they can come to the right decision on this. Well, you'd think that they would anyway. I know it doesn't always happen as like that, and sometimes you get these ridiculous ideas. But, you know, they know the player. He's been at Fulham a long time now. They should know his sort of biomechanics or whatever the expression is, and therefore they should be able to know whether he's worth a long-term punt or not.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that, David. And listen, the fact that according to this article, he's been offered a contract, it's been rejected, tells me that the club's interested, and it just sounds like it's about negotiating the right deal for both sides. And hopefully that will happen, because I actually think he's a player that still has potential. I know that's a double-edged sword word, you know. It's like, because he hasn't reached his full potential yet. He hasn't reached his where we think he will be someday. But I hope that he stays at Fulham. I was encouraged by this. But, David, like you mentioned, sometimes agents use the media to get a better deal. Maybe there's a little bit of that going on. You could be right about that. But in the end, I really hope a deal gets done. I think he's a player that should be a Fulham player for a long time. So I hope they make a deal with him, and I hope he's, you know, I'm not looking for like a 4-year deal, maybe a 2 to 3 year deal. And let's take it from there, because I think he's a player that you want here. Anyways, all right, let's move on, David. One last topic in the round table. This is from Fulham supporter Gary Cooper that specifically asked me to ask you this, David. He wanted me to ask your thoughts on the shambolic throw-ins during games this season. What are your thoughts about that?
I've got some Western music for Gary here anyway.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling.
Well, this is my high noon then, yeah? So, Well, I can't switch it off now. It's like Yanis and his cats, isn't it? The throw-ins, I don't know. I mean, we've seen a wide variety of throw-ins this season. I mean, we've seen, you know, mostly short stuff, but we've seen actually something that we don't normally see with Fulham, long throw-ins. And actually, on the few occasions we've seen them, they've actually been a kind of a useful sort of plan B. I think it was Garbett, I think, in one game was taking them, and we actually caused a lot of trouble with it. But the thing I think that gets me most with the throw-ins, though, is we just don't seem to use them in an attacking way. Other teams seem to take quick throw-ins, you know, and gain a bit of advantage from it. But for me, we seem to be too ponderous with them most of the time. We end up always playing the ball backwards. There's never kind of
an incisive
throw-in as such.
Good point.
Also, sometimes, I don't know, sometimes some of the throw-ins have just been just rubbish. Technically, they look bad as well. I'm surprised they haven't been called as a foul throw sometimes. But, no, I mean, it's like lots of things in football, though. The other thing that would always get me, and this isn't a Fulham thing particularly, it's free kicks. You know, in the old days, if you got a free kick anywhere sort of, you know, from the halfway line forward, you would hit it to the penalty area. You'd push everyone forward. But now you play these little silly sideways ones or backward passes. You don't actually gain any territorial advantage by it. You have to try and play your way through it. And the throw-ins, they're a bit like that as well, really. We see other teams take quick throw-ins, and people are set free. We have and corners as well. Sometimes take a quick corner and we're still asleep. I'm not sure exactly what Gary is, you know, if he's got a particular hate of our throw-ins. If it's, you know, the fact that we take too long, or we go backwards, or that we just don't take it, you know, enough long throws, but we don't seem to gain much from a throw-in. I mean, we don't always gain much from a corner, to be honest with you. Some of our corners have not been very good. We don't score, enough goals from corners or set pieces like other teams do, especially against us, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I don't think it's the worst issue that we have at the club. I think that, you know, conceding goals from set pieces from corners is going to be a bigger bugbear. But the throw-ins,
totally.
You know what I mean? It's the throw-ins aren't our worst situation, but it's worth pointing out. I don't know. It's a shame Gary hasn't said what he would like to see, how he'd like to see them different, really. Whether it would be in terms of, you know, more attacking, longer throws, just getting there quickly. I know when I play football, I absolutely sprint to take a throw in. You know, I try and get people to go with me so that we can gain an advantage before catch everyone napping. But it's just all very lazy and leisurely, isn't it? That's I kind of think what Gary's probably most annoyed at.
Yeah, and David, that's what annoys me. And you said the two words that really talk about it. Gain much. We don't gain much, you know. We really don't. We don't gain much. They aren't really attacking. And it happens often, you know, the throw-ins go to the other team for whatever reason. You know, the long throw-ins actually have been a little bit better, but I've seen on many occasions watching some of these replays, horrible throw-ins, especially on the road. Some of them have been very bad. So I think I understand where Gary's coming from. But, yes, David, you're right. There are bigger problems on the team. There's no question about that. Conceding goals on set pieces is much higher up than throw-ins. But I don't think that we use the throw-ins to our advantage enough, David. I think that's where Gary's going on this.
No, you are. Anthea has chimed up as well now, because you know Anthea's in the UK. She said she hates short corners and she hates it when we lose possession from throw-ins, which is, yeah, I think
and it happens
we do that
often.
A lot as
Anthea's
well.
Anthea's right. It happens often, David.
No, you're right. It is. I can think of occasions where we've just conceded possession straight away from the throw.
Right.
So, yeah,
right. And
I think.
No, David. I think that's part of the issue. I think part of the issue also is that it doesn't really lead anywhere. Like you said, it's not real attacking. I think it's a combination of that the passes seems often go to the other team, or it's just not attacking enough. There isn't enough purpose with them, and I think that's part of the problem. But like you mentioned, there are bigger issues with Fulham Football Club, but this is also one of them, and I'm glad that we could talk about it. All right, my friend, it's time to preview this upcoming match tomorrow. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'll be listening to it. I wish I was going to be there with you, my friend, but I'm not. I will be listening to it. Let's start here. Let's start with some quotes from Slavisa from the Fulham Football Club Twitter page. That will get us going. Let's start here. Before we mention that, there's also team news. Sakari Matilla is the only absentee for tomorrow's game. That's actually a positive. I do wish Sakari a quick recovery. I hope he gets back. But that's good news that he's really the only one. But we'll actually see the team that Slavisa picks. Here are some quotes from Slavisa, David. Let's see. Let's start here. There are three important games left. This is from Slavisa Jukanovic. Forest are in a similar situation to us, a historically big club who should do better. We are in a little bit of more of a comfortable situation, and we'll try and find a better performance and play better football. It's very important to finish the season well. We owe our supporters better performance, and we want to finish in style. Okay, those are quotes from Slavisa, David. What do you make of them? The one I'll just mention on my part, I have a feeling that again, this is just my gut feeling is I think we might see a different style of football. I think you might see them play better football tomorrow. What are your thoughts?
It's difficult to know what to think because he comes up with all these surprises and things. And obviously, he said he didn't mention the injuries before either last time. So if you remember, we kind of thought that would mean certain people would be back or be available, but they weren't ultimately. So if you take into his word, that means we know we have Maddle back and we have Kearney back, obviously, who he didn't come on the subs bench last week. So we hope that's been the case. But I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think of being at home and literally safe, you know, mathematically, that we could go back to trying something a bit more adventurous rather than four centre-backs and four central midfielders. But I'm not sure if he's ready to go back to the 3-5-2 yet. I still think he will be more minded to play in a similar way. Obviously, there was, you know, a bit of chat earlier that Ryan Sessegnon is in the first team squad. I don't know if you saw that. Apparently,
I did not see that.
And we may see him on the bench. I think it came from a tweet that someone retweeted that it was from his brother talking about him being in the first team squad. And maybe making the bench. I don't know if that's speculative rubbish or absolutely the gospel fact, but we'll soon find out. But I wouldn't be against or surprised if, you know, being mathematically safe, that we do see perhaps a radically different side come played. I mean, this is why, you know, you may regret your words to me the other day that there's no way we're not going to beat Bolton or whatever you said, because against Bolton we may be completely safe, or we should be completely safe. And I mean, anything could really happen team-wise. He may, you know, he may leave out everyone who's leaving at the end of the season, potentially. We could play a very, very different team. And it may mean that Bolton have more of a chance in the game. I don't know. But, you know, talking about tomorrow, I would like to think that we would see something more attacking, but I have a feeling he's going to kind of stick more to the what's been working for him recently.
You know what, David? Logic is on your side. It does make sense, but I just have a gut feeling he's going to go back to the 3-5-2. I'm going to throw it out there. I think he's going to be adventurous tomorrow because the opponent that they're playing is going to come at them. I think this is going to be an open match. That's my prediction. Because I'm going to share some information with you from Nottingham Forest. I watched a ton of video this morning to really get familiar with them. And they're interesting. Obviously, they're down at the same level as us, but they're an interesting team. So I'm going to share some information with you, and maybe I'll end up being right. You could be right. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Let's start with where both teams are on the table. Nottingham Forest are currently 18th. They have 11 victories, 15 draws, 17 losses. They've scored 37. They've given up 44. They're on a -7 goal differential, and they're on 48 points. Fulham one place behind at 19. We have 11 victories, 15 draws, 17 losses, just like Forest. We've scored 64. We've given up 73. The difference is we're on a -9 goal differential, and we're also on 48 points. Here's some information from WhoScored.com. Strengths, counterattacks, creating scoring chances, stealing the ball from the opposition. Weaknesses, keeping possession of the ball, defending against long shots, defending set pieces, aerial duels. Very weak at finishing scoring chances. I can back that up based on the video that I watched. Style of play. David, they take a lot of shots. Let me stress, they take a lot of shots. They take a lot of long shots. I'll stress that as well. They attack through the middle. They attack often down the left. They are aggressive. They rotate their first 11, and they do play a good amount in their own half. But I will tell you that this is a team that comes at you, and if they get anywhere near the box, they're shooting. They take a ton of shots. And the player to watch, the player that Fulham really need to contain in this match, after watching all this video, because everything to me begins and ends with Henry Lansbury. If you can control that guy, you got a good chance of winning this match because everything starts with him. So you really have to contain him in central midfield. That's their main guy. That's the guy to really do a job on. That to me is going to be the job of Fulham, to contain Henry Lansbury from facilitating to his teammates, because he really does make that team go. All right, David, before I go to you and get your thoughts on Nottingham Forest, I'm going to just share this stats breakdown that I always do, again from WhoScored.com. Fulham are currently fifth in the league in possession at 52.5%. Nottingham Forest at 19th at 48.1%. Shots per game, Fulham are 16th with 12.3. Nottingham Forest are fifth with 13.6. Passing success, Fulham are eighth with 75.3%. Nottingham Forest are 12th at 72.1%. Aerials one, Fulham are 13th with 20.7%. And Nottingham Forest are 12th at 21. Crosses per game, Fulham are 21st with 18. And the Nottingham Forest have the same amount of crosses per game at 18. Long balls, Fulham are currently 14th with 83. And Nottingham Forest are 12th with 84. Short passes, Fulham are 5th in the league with 385. And Nottingham Forest are 16th with 317. All right, David, I give you a good amount of information there. What are your thoughts about Nottingham Forest heading into this match?
Well, without sort of looking at what you'd looked at, I was really thinking that Henry Lansbury was the main man for them, and he's the one that we have to stop.
Totally.
And, you know, he's someone obviously we were linked with as well. I think in last summer people rumoured that we may be interested in him, or was it even before that, I think. But so, yeah, they sound like a very direct side. The annoying thing was that up at Nottingham, yeah, we started the better team and maybe should have got our nose in front, but we didn't. It was poor defending. They came at us. And I remember, obviously, one of the goals was, I think Joe Lewis was in goal for us. He should have done better on it. It was a long shot. He didn't deal with very well. And that does, you know, that sort of rings true what you're saying about the long shots. Thankfully,
yep.
we've got Bettinelli in goal, not Lonergan. So if they are going to take long shots, hopefully we're slightly better protected there at the back. But, you know, it's a sort of a counter-attacking team. So, do we leave ourselves open, or do we play, the two banks of four scenario again like we've been doing to try and not leave ourselves open to the counter-attack? Because if we can, stop their counter-attack, which is their main, weapon perhaps, especially away from
right.
home, then we can stop them playing. And then it's a game, table doesn't lie, remember. They're down where we are. So, in the law of averages, this is a winnable game, most certainly. Even I've jinxed it by ticking the win box on your survey on Twitter earlier.
Oh, no.
I keep ticking. That's right. Oh, no. I've ticked defeat at Ipswich, and I was so nearly very wrong, but in the end, it was almost a moral victory for me because I thought, here we go, After Gentleman Jim was talking about a clean sheet with 88 minutes gone, it was always going to be the case, wasn't it, I think, on that one,
yeah.
that we would implode like we always do, unfortunately. But now even I've suggested this is a winnable game and we should win tomorrow because, they've not had a good season. And, they rely very much on what they do, and hopefully we've learned from that. And I think if we can, be tight and we've got the players back, I think we can frustrate them, and it'll be us who'll be asking the questions of them. If we can restrict them to long shots, hopefully this time we'll be able to deal with long shots better, because that has obviously been a real Achilles heel for us as well. But not as bad, obviously, as giving corners away. So we don't want to be a situation of giving corners away. They scored from one as well. And it was a bit of a comedy of errors, the one at Nottingham, the City Grounds. We just really didn't close our men down. I think Stearman had a bit of a shocker that day, if I remember rightly. And actually, Tim Ream was playing with Stearman. He had a bit of a shocker as well. That was when we really kind of noticed that his weakness as a centre-back was exposed in that game. So, make sure we're strong in the middle for the long ball. Strong throughout the middle to stop them running at us, I think, and down the flank. So, I think we can be a bit more adventurous with the 4-4-2 than we have been some games. But I don't think he's going to change it. I'd like to see him change, but I just don't think he will.
Okay, let me ask you, let's just play for instance. For instance, he did go with a 3-5-2, David. You don't think he's going to do that? Just thoughts on this, because you love the formation. You've always talked about the balance. Against a team like this, does this give us the proper balance, or does it leave us too exposed? If, say, he did go with a 3-5-2.
Well, it shouldn't do, because, the logic says you've got the three central defenders, not the two central defenders, and you've got the wing-backs to drop in as well. So you can have five at the back, not three. In more forward situations, you've got the three across the middle, or the two and the two plus one across the middle, and the wing backs to kind of supplement there. So, if you can keep them further up the pitch, why not? I mean, the only weakness theoretically, with the 3-5-2, looking at it logically, is that you only have two players on the flanks, and that is it. Your wing
right.
backs, everyone else is narrow and central. So if
exactly.
you think they have people who can double up on the wings, then that's going to be an issue. But that's not necessarily the way they play. Because through the middle, you should be stronger because you have the three central players at the back and the three central players in midfield. So you should, through the middle of the team, logic suggests you should be stronger. Obviously, with the 4-4-2 we play, it's not quite as straightforward as that because we tend to play the inverted players. So you have Kearney on the right and someone else on the left who's right-footed. They both come in and you become narrow. So you still do have a potential situation where the fullbacks are more exposed. And in this case, they are fullbacks because they are deeper. So you can be exposed just as badly by only having one wide player in the 4-4-2 the way we play it if these midfield players play narrow. So it's difficult, but the 3-5-2 has the benefits. And we've seen it when it works very well for us. Allowing Kearney to play central, allowing Fredericks to do probably his best, it'd be in his best position. And so when it works, it's great. But this just hasn't been the consistency. We haven't played it enough. We haven't had maybe the right players. We've not tried the 3-5-2 as far as I can remember with Ince and Parker as there. So, you know, it would be interesting. I'd be obviously delighted to see it come out tomorrow. I really would. But
okay. It's
just, I'm just not sure if he's going to want to make changes. We had a solid result on Tuesday. Disappointing as it was a solid result to go there and get a point. We'd have all taken the point beforehand. So is he going to change it drastically? I don't really think so.
It's interesting, David, because maybe I was getting a little bit too excited based on what I was reading from him. Quotes from him thinking, he wants to play football. Maybe he will go back to the 3-5-2. But you could be right. It could just be a more attacking version of the 4-4-2. I would love to see the 3-5-2. I say go for it. You know, that's my thoughts on that, David. I think it's moving forward. I hope that's going to be his go-to formation next season. And I hope he builds a team that can play the 3-5-2. That's what I want to see moving forward. Cause I really like that formation. I see the benefits of it. And if he goes with a 4-4-2, so be it. But I really would love to see the 3-5-2 tomorrow. All right, my friend. Let's now move on. I've told you a little bit about Nottingham Forest. So who are your key players tomorrow?
For Fulham? For Fulham, this is a game that, you know, we need to take it to them and we need to show them who's the boss. So, you know, McCormack, he had a great season against Forest last season, of course. He scored a couple up there and a hat-trick at home. And I've seen Anthony has already predicted a hat-trick, so he's probably got no chance now. But she predicted a clean sheet for Fulham as well, which is even worse. But I think you've got to look at your front two players here. I think, you know, McCormack, they're going to be scared of him. They're going to be worried about him. And so you hope in the fact that they try maybe put almost too much attention on him, that will allow maybe Moussa Dembele and Tom Kearney, if he's back in the team, a bit of space to do what they do. So I think, you know, you've got to look there. Of course, I expect the players further back to do their jobs. But, you know, as I say, this is a home match for us against a team who are in the same part of the table. This is a match we've got to win, so we need to take the game to them. So the front three for me are the most important players. They need to get near the goal. They need to shoot. They need to take their chances.
Interesting, because I was thinking about a player, David. I was going definitely in a different direction than you. I was thinking someone like Rohan Ince to protect that back four or back three, whatever, you know, whatever he decides to do.
Well, it's true, but if they're going to be playing like a long ball game, it sometimes cuts the midfield out. So, you know, it could be very interesting. I mean, where we go with it. But I would imagine that if Ince and Parker are playing, one of them will be trying to stop, you know, and disrupt Lansbury. Obviously, that would be their job. So whoever's
Absolutely.
Got the job to mark Lansbury, yeah, if one of them has been given a specific job to shadow Lansbury, then that will be the key player for us as well in midfield, apart from
totally.
Obviously from, you know, the strikers. But I don't know whether they will designate one player to stay with Lansbury or they'll do it zonally. But that is, you know, that is the other key job. Apart from that, you're right in bringing that one up as well.
Yeah, listen, you know, because I'm thinking about the long shots by Nottingham Forest, but you brought up a good point about Lansbury because I talked about him from the beginning. You need to stop him. You stop him, you stop this team. That's the way I look at it. So it'll be Slavisa's job to figure out how he wants to attack that. Like I said, if you got someone shadowing him, I'm all for that. Just make sure that this guy doesn't beat you tomorrow, because this guy really can control a game. I've watched it enough. And we all know that Fulham wanted him. I know why Fulham wanted him, because he's that type of player that can really just set everything up for his team. All right, David. What does Fulham need to do to win this match tomorrow?
Score more goals than Forest. As simple as that. score first and keep scoring, because one will probably not be enough. You know that.
I agree with you.
Score twice at least. Because we're always in danger of conceding one, so make sure we score at least two.
Okay, very good, my friend, very good. All right, let's go through your starting 11 tomorrow, your starting 11.
But this is difficult, but I'm trying to base it upon what I think he would do. So, assuming that he's not spun as any you know, lies again, and people like Maddle are back, I would expect to see Maddle and Amorebieta reunited there. I don't know where Amorebieta was the other day, on holiday or whatever, injured, rested. But, yeah, Amorebieta and Maddle I'd expect to see there. And if we're going to try and, you know, play the game at home to be a bit more exciting and attacking, then I want to see Fredericks and I want to see Garbutt really there, because at least, you know, I'm not overly satisfied with either of them as defenders, but, you know, we're at home. It's not a match that we should be setting out to defend. It's a match we should be setting out to attack in. So I think they're ample enough defenders. I know we have reservations about both of them as defenders, but they are the only two real fullbacks that give us something going forward on the right occasion. So those two, along with Amorebieta and Maddle, Ince and Parker, central midfield. I think we'll see Kearney come back on the right, probably. On the left is difficult now, because you could have any one of three. We could see Tynecliffe, we could see LVC, or we could see even Hyman. But I have a feeling Hyman may miss out because he missed out in the week. They, you know, recovering from illness, he may just be a bench player, I think. So it's a real toss-up between LVC or Tynecliffe on the left. Neither is really suited to that. But I have a feeling maybe he will stick with Tynecliffe, because he seems to prefer Tynecliffe, which will be hard on LBC. And up front, of course, Dembele and Musso, I would think. But, you know, he's going to spring a surprise on someone. There'll be a surprise in there, someone we didn't probably expect.
I totally agree with that, David. I completely agree with you. Your starting 11 sounds good, but I have a feeling Slavica will have a surprise. All right, let's go to predictions. So right there, right now, let's look at the Cottage Talk Twitter page. I have 90 votes. Win, 78%. Draw, 13%. Loss, 9%. All right, now I'm going to go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page, because we have a good amount of predictions. David, why don't you drop off and call back, and we're going to just go over by a couple minutes. So why don't you call right back in, my friend?
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'll go through the predictions from the from the Fulham supporters on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Let's start with Stephen Well. Fulham win 3-1, McCormack 2, and Dembele the other. Then a stoppage time goal for Forest. Yeah, I could see that too, Stephen. Yavor Alexiev, 2-1 to Fulham. No clean sheet this season, I'm afraid. Gary Cooper, 2-1 to Fulham. Ross McCormack double. I hope so. Guy Rofus says 3-1 to Fulham. McCormack hat-trick, just like the last season. Okay. Brian Hughes, 2-1 to Fulham. Ross McCormack and Tunnicliffe score, we get lazy and give one up before halftime, but we come back and a win in the 75th to 80th minute. McCormack, man of the match. Okay, very good. Roger Lewis says 3-1, as we don't do clean sheets. Lars Anderson says, time for a clean sheet, 2-0. John Niemeyer, 3-2 to Fulham. Mark Hill, 4-1 to Fulham. And that's going to do it for the predictions. David, I'm going to bring you back on. What is your prediction for the match?
Because it's never easy with Fulham, and because we don't do clean sheets, I think 2-1 for me.
2-1. Okay, very good. David, I'm going to go to my standard. Fulham are going to win. I'm going 3-1 to Fulham, but no hat trick. I'm going to go 2 goals from Moussa Dembele and 1 goal from Ross McCormack. So I'm going to mix it up a little bit. Sound good?
Yeah, I think somehow we'll probably see someone else score. I don't know. There's always something strange happens. You can never bet on Fulham, I think. You know, if you're a betting man, they're probably the worst team to bet on them, aren't they? But, you know, a win is a win, and we'll take it with both hands. And then we'll be sweating the last two games, won't we?
The last two games. Well, yes, because I need the two victories. You're trying to do like the hex on me with the bold match. I've again, reading what Savica has to say, he sees that these three games could be a springboard towards next season. I'm paraphrasing, but he sees the importance of these last three matches, David. I think we're going to win two, and I think you're never going to hear the end of it. That's my final thought. What's your final thought?
Well, as you know, Anthony is over from New Zealand to come to the match, and we're looking forward to meeting up with Mike and Emilio tomorrow. So, you know, be great for that, and we'll try and get a picture for you.
Oh, please do, David. now I'm getting sad because I would love to meet Anthea. I honestly would love to meet all you guys together. That actually makes me a little sad, but I'm glad that all you guys will be together. That's wonderful, Dave. That's a great final thought.
No, looking forward to it.
All right. Great show, my friend. Great show. This was actually an excellent show. You were fantastic, David, but it is time to go. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, my friend, and say hi to Anthea for me.
Cheers, Russ. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Boys.